This is Jason Q, Citizen and Friends, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Jason Q, Citizen and Friends program for the second hour. We had a lot of fun playing with the gaslighting approach that the media is doing to us along with the governments. And I like the way that we are now calling her Jacinta Ardern because she knows everything about the vaccine, as does her government. And today she celebrates being the country with the most deaths per 100,000 of any country in the world. And we're meant to trust our institutions. This is why it is so frustrating and so obvious. And these people never want to ever admit that they were wrong. And so they can only gaslight us because that's what they do, and they wait for the next election because that's the natural order of things, the cycle of what it is that's going on. So I find it fascinating now that Donald Trump has come out and has decided to speak up on many things yet again, which is just to keep it all simmering as he prepares to announce, which will be likely the earliest that anyone's ever announced that they'll be running. But right now there were reasons why he won't, and that's primarily down to the idea of having to report on money spent in a campaign. So if you're not campaigning, you don't have to report, you don't have to raise money, etc. The man is a master at using the media, even though they hate him, to get the story out there, and he's a master at being able to control the agenda in exactly what he has done yet again by what he reports on or what he comments on. So he brings it very, very much back to the very basic agenda that the mainstream and the general public are following. He can build up their support and no doubt will be the next Republican nominee, and likely with Ron DeSantis as his running mate, which should set for the greatest electoral victory in all of US history when that eventually gets there in a couple of years' time, if not before, should something unprecedented occur. Now, we listen with great interest to the events around the world, Ukraine, Russia, going on and on and on in the background, and we're waiting for something to give and something to be exposed, and nothing much ever really does. It just seems to be playing out in the way that it's happening. You cross back to little old Australia, and here we are in the early days of a brand new government with a Labor Party Prime Minister. That's from the progressive, the left, the socialist, so to speak, party. You can put all those words together. And you have a Prime Minister who has not stopped getting on aeroplanes for the last 2 months all around the world telling us about the perils of climate change. And so it is that not only are we dealing with the second worst amount of COVID deaths and cases in the world in this country, and the threat of once again having to put your mask back on if you're a mask wearer, once again being locked down for one or another, and being told now, gaslit, that climate change is a national security phenomenon. Of course, not only are we having to worry about monkeypox and another vaccine that just so happens to be ready, but foot and mouth disease is making a return after about 100 years, courtesy of our friends in Indonesia. So the washing of shoes at airports is the approach. So we quickly learn how obvious it will be that the government will threaten us, will tell us that it's all under control. Then it won't be. It'll get out. It'll cause a shocking outcome where the animals will have to be dealt with, not unlike the bee scenario. In Australia now, we've got in the Hunter Valley, where we've had all the bee hives having to be taken away because of a particular strain of mite that only affects European bees and not local natural-born bees. But we're going to take them all out at the same time. So in New South Wales, there's no bees. There'll be no cattle. There'll be no anything because it's climate change. There'll be lockdowns and mask mandates. Yeah, it's just a great place to live, really. And then they'll talk about how the housing prices are still going up despite interest rates going up. It's enough to turn anyone into a subject of being gaslit. This is gaslighting abuse that never ends. There is no solution to any of this. There's only a process. And within this process, it always leads now to a worse outcome than when we started. As Trump said years ago, the cure can't be worse than the disease. These guys specialize in introducing one only cures that are always worse than the disease themselves. And this is why we are all tearing our hair out as we go. There's a lot to report on in today's show and discuss about what's going on. I'm going to introduce Sonia Bailey in just a moment. And we're going to get into, obviously, foot and mouth disease, monkeypox. We're going to look at a bit of a local issue as well that's not just local from the perspective, but it's more that it affects everyone in the same way as we discuss corruption and, again, the process that is trying to deny people just their natural lives. And we're going to talk about how Sonia was banned this week on social media for a month because she shared a BBC article that showed that someone actually did die from a vaccine. So instead of sharing that information on social media, she was banned for breaching their community standards, a story in itself. So much to report on, so much to talk about in this hour. Now, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest or host that you would like to hear on TNT Radio? Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss, then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
Less of the culture you don't want.
I've had enough of this cancel culture.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the show, Sonia Bailey. Goodness me, what a week it's been. And if you're an Australian, you're really doing it tough. But for once, we've slipped in the rankings. We're only second now for the most deaths per 100K in a week behind our friends in New Zealand. This is a sad trophy to see anyone get. And it's horrible that the two biggest lockdown advocates are now leading the world in this failure. What does it say to you about what they've been doing to us for the last 2 years or so?
That's debatable, I think, because when we consider the way these numbers are formulated and the way that they are expressed to Joe Public, we actually see that the numbers are not quite accurate in their reflection. So in that, what I'm referring to is earlier in your previous hour, you had discussed the bending of the truth to reflect the agenda. Something that I realized early on, being here in New South Wales, they would do a live stream every morning from the Premier's office at 11 a.m. and you'd have all the COVID updates. You'd have the cases, the vaccination numbers, the death rate, everything that had happened in the last 24 hours, in the last week, and running totals and all of that sort of fear-mongering. And I came to realize that they were quoting death rates up to 8 p.m. the night before and in the last 24 hours. So what that meant is there was actually a 16-hour overlap that they were quoting these figures from. And I very quickly realized they were double counting the deaths. So as they commenced their vaccine rollout, they were essentially overquoting deaths from COVID by at least double. So if they're also completely unprepared to admit that the vaccine and vaccine side effects are killing people, then the numbers of deaths from COVID are completely conflated. And we can't rely on our public health systems and we can't rely on our mainstream media to reflect information that is actually truthful. And that actually sort of brings me to the article that I shared that got me banned on Facebook. And it was from a year ago. It was a BBC article, Lisa Shaw, presenter's death due to complications of COVID vaccine. So this is from August 2021. A radio presenter died due to complications from the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine, a coroner has found. Lisa Shaw, who worked for BBC Radio Newcastle in UK, died at the age of 44 in May after developing headaches a week after getting her first dose of the vaccine. It goes on to explain that she suffered from blood clots in the brain, which led to her death, and they linked those blood clots to the COVID vaccine. Now, interestingly, the advertising that is in the midst of this article is COVID vaccines and rare clots. What do we know? How effective is the vaccine and do I need a booster? Now, something that struck me from this article is that there's a link that says there have been 417 reported cases and 72 deaths after 24.8 million first doses and 23.9 million second doses of AstraZeneca vaccine in the UK. But when you click that link for the reported cases and deaths, it's purely relating to COVID cases and deaths. Now, being a researcher that I am, of course, I clicked the link so that I could read it. Now, the thing about that BBC article is I posted it to social media without any comment. So I was just sharing the article without any kind of comment as to context for the article. Just thought it was interesting information. And with that, I'm banned. And I'm not just restricted. I'm fully banned. I can't post, like, can't comment. I can't even share anything via Messenger. I'm basically completely in stasis. So in clicking the link and doing a little bit of homework, it says it takes you to the UK government publications on coronavirus and what they refer to as yellow card reporting. And in a summary, it says that over the first 26 months of the pandemic, so we're talking 2 years and 2 months, over 178,448 people across the UK have died within 28 days of a positive test for coronavirus. And I thought, hold on, 28 days. So basically, if you test a positive within a month before your death, regardless of your cause of death, then that's counted as a coronavirus death in the UK. And I thought, okay, 180,000 over 2 years. What does that actually break down to? And this is where, as you were talking before in the first hour about the, you know, the good old gaslighting that we see coming out, is these numbers just don't add up the way they're telling you they do. So 180,000 deaths over a 2 year period. Okay, we can figure that out. That's 90,000 a year. Righto. So what is the average death toll per year in the UK? So I looked that up. 600,000 in 2019, 689,000 in 2020, 612,000 in 2021. So 90,000 people having died with a positive COVID test within 4 weeks of their death, 90,000 out of 600,000 to 700,000 people. That's not significant. And yet nowhere in any of these figures do they say from COVID. And immediately after the paragraph where it's talking about these 180,000 people that have died, it goes on to talk about the three vaccines available in the UK. All have been authorized for supply by the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency following a thorough review of safety, quality, and that magical word, efficacy, from clinical trials. Now, being who I am, I clicked the link and I said, well, that's interesting. What clinical trials are they referring to? And it's my favorite trial, the Pfizer-BioNTech, that involved more than 44,000 participants. Now, that trial, I think you and I should definitely do an entire show on, because when I read the trial data from that, there were so many red flags, and it was actually that data that made me say, I am absolutely not getting vaccinated. I will die before I get vaccinated after having read that trial data. So when we're seeing these gold medals that these countries are, you know, giving to themselves because we've got all these wonderful numbers and we're getting our cases down, but never mind that people are dying, they'll tell us whatever it is they want us to hear to back their own agenda.
And that's the scary part of all of this is the average person doesn't even know what the word agenda means or refers to, and that there couldn't possibly be an agenda. It's simply to just deal with the problem at hand. If it was to deal with the problem at hand, they would be putting their hands up and going, hey, this vaccine is not doing what we hoped it would do. Someone would criticize it, and you would be able to share an article on social media and not be banned for 30 days. So these things are an absolute admission of agenda, an admission of guilt in the idea that this is serving a higher purpose. What we're finding so difficult, of course, is that there the lack of consensus in those believing it, but there is, of course, a move that more and more people are starting to smell said rat, and finally at long last are being able to say, hey, yeah, we've got to work out what's really going on here. This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Now, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break in a moment, and when we come back, I want to just explore on this a little bit more, because there's so much other areas that we need to cover off on in the show. There's so many different subjects. Don't go anywhere. You're on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Joseph Arthur is talking about.
He was talking about the white hats are really in control, aka the supposed good guys that are going to like save the day from all this. And this is all just, a political theater to reveal the real intentions of the evil ones. And that the white hats are the ones responsible for putting in such ridiculous candidates for president and vice president in these times. Because if you think about it, it really just couldn't get much more ridiculous than these two. I mean, they were both unelectable until they weren't. I mean, Kamala was out of the scene and then she wasn't. You know what I mean? So what do you guys think of that? Do you think it's a white hat, black hat thing? Do you believe in that stuff? I mean, it really could be none worse than Biden and Kamala, really. I mean, it is ridiculous.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A lot of people may not agree with us right now, but there may come a time when they actually have an issue that affects them, that they don't have the freedom to choose. And if we don't preserve it, we won't have it.
Get to see this for yourself.
We begin this new week with an extraordinary moment in our history. 18 days into this truck convoy, and the federal government invoked a security measure that goes beyond anything seen in this country in the last 50 years.
Banks will be told to freeze the accounts of anyone helping finance the protests. And the owners of vehicles jamming streets will be directly targeted.
Trucking for Freedom, Chapter 1, How We Got Here. Visit truckingforfreedom.com.
Government couldn't stop a flu-like virus. And now they want you to believe they can stop the Earth's climate from changing? The voice of reason is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends, where we are working very, very hard to be able to be the voice of reason. I think we're doing a great job, Sonia. We were pulling apart the narrative yet again about the way that the government is able to manipulate. Now, you've got more to comment on that.
I do. So I actually just yesterday was watching a YouTube series by a guy named Joe Scott. And in this particular video, it's called The Most Horrifying Human Experiments of All Time. And he goes on to talk about a variety of different experiments that governments and armies and defense forces have actually carried out on their own people. So he talks about, he initially talks about the Russian sleep experiment, which is debatable as to whether it actually ever occurred. He goes into talking about sort of multiple cases of where governments have experimented on their own people in the name of protecting them from bioweapons from other countries, testing on their own people. And he lists in the description the links to all of the sources for the cases that he refers to. And there's a good 20 or 30 in there. And we're talking about some pretty serious, devastating, horrific things that governments have done to their own people in the name of safety. But what I noticed, and it almost made me turn the video off, is right in the intro, he begins talking about medical trials and how data is collected. and how even though now we have these safe and thorough clinical trials that have strict protocols and stringent testing, it wasn't always the case. He then goes on to essentially praise COVID vaccines as testing on thousands of people under strict protocols and stringent testing. But I thought, look, you know what? I'll listen to the whole video because I am interested in the other cases. Now, the first case that he went into was a case during the Second World War where the government was actually testing on their own army. So soldiers were being selected for these trials. And what they were looking for was a way to poison a person with something that was odorless and colorless and that could be transported easily without refrigeration, wasn't too big, you know, it wasn't dangerous to the person handling it. And I'm going to quote this guy from the video because it just completely contradicted everything he said about the COVID-19 vaccine. He says in his very first story about this, ultimately, what they were looking for was an odorless and tasteless combination of things that could kill someone undetected. So the prisoners had no idea that they were taking poisons at all. And he goes on to talk about this trial, and I'm thinking, you are literally talking about COVID vaccines. You are literally describing what each nation's government is doing to their own people. Their own people. They don't care. The citizens are not there to hold up the country. The ruling powers are there to control and coerce and keep the citizens under their control. So I found that kind of mind-blowing that here he is talking about these 20-odd stories, some really horrific cases of things that governments have done to their own people, and he literally commenced by saying how wonderful the COVID vaccines were and how stringent and safe the testing was, and I just couldn't fathom it. I couldn't fathom that you, in one hand, can openly discuss these horrific things that your own government has done to your own people, and yet you're not seeing it right in front of you.
You just want to cry. You get to a point where you just want to give up and say, we can't keep going on the way that we're going. This is just all too much. And yet you can't, you don't, you won't, and you get up and you keep going. But it's that energy sappingness of it. It's the same process of the great gaslight, isn't it? That they masquerade as this great savior and safety, and yet everything else is completely covered up. And the intention, like at every part of this compartmentalization promoted to your level of incompetence, it's so perfect in the way that these people will continue to perpetrate these crimes against the people and are the government of the day before and after.
And that now, is precisely how abusers dominate their victims, is initially any kind of questioning, arguing or resistance that comes forward is explained away and it's justified. And, you know, we see it all the time with domestic violence victims where the abusive partner will apologize and say, I didn't mean it and I'm sorry and you made me, and if you didn't do the wrong thing, then I wouldn't have had to. And then there are all of the rewards that follow, the gift giving and the words, the kindness and the actions and the time spent and the quality of time. But without a doubt, they will always come full circle and abuse again. And we're seeing that in governments all around the world. We're seeing it in our own country. We've had a lockdown and then, you know, come out of lockdown and if you get jabbed, you'll be rewarded. And now that you've been rewarded, life can go back to normal. But next minute, then there's another reason and another lockdown and another pandemic that we have to face that brings us back under this coercive control.
So we're aware of we're now aware of how they work. So we've got an advantage for the first time, and I think this is the imprint of what we're able to discuss in the show now. So we should be able to continue to monitor the way that we do, to be able to point out more effectively and almost be able to predict what's coming next. And the reason that I say that is because they have now got so many balls in the air, it's almost impossible to fathom. So, I mean, just in Australia, I mean, we've gone into winter. Obviously, where they let rip over the summer period, Omicron was a perfect storm, and we just keep ramping up. Our trajectory on our case data graphs is almost a perfect 60-degree line straight up since Christmas time of last year. Our cases just don't stop. They just keep going up on that same angle, and the death rate the same way. Then you add in the foot and mouth disease and the threat of the monkeypoxes and all the rest of it, and then they're throwing up. Remember Marburg from last year? Well, they forgot about that one.
Yeah.
And interestingly, Marburg is characterized by something else that's fairly unique, is that it comes from the same family as Ebola. It's a particular type of virus. But what's more interesting on the World Health Organization's own website is that the primary method of detecting said Marburg virus, PCR test, wouldn't you know it? And so there it is. And then typical incubation period. It's almost like that this selection of control of diseases are just selected off a desk or a bookcase of, let's go for that disease. Oh, how about we take that one? That would be a really good one to get out now if we're intent on controlling the world and how it's going.
I think another important note on that is, as you said, Marburg is quite similar. It's from the same family of diseases as Ebola. And up until now, as much as governments have made vaccines mandatory for people who work in certain sectors or people who are within certain age groups, there's not been actually any forced vaccination. However, the World Health Organization, in conjunction with the UN, has a policy whereby a country can force vaccinate citizens if there is a pandemic of a highly contagious and highly deadly disease, such as Ebola. So this is why tinfoil hat wearers have been saying for the last 6 to 12 months, Marburg's going to be next, Ebola's going to be next, because even if that's not really what people are getting sick with, if the government decides that that's what the pandemic is, then they can force vaccinate every citizen.
We're going to quickly pause for the news headlines. We'll be back after this.
Matt Boylan here with a quick check of the day's headlines. Russia has charged 92 members of Ukraine's armed forces accused of committing crimes against humanity, including shelling civilians. Former US President Donald Trump has offered his strongest hint yet that he'll run for president again in 2024. And Poland has announced ambitions to create the most powerful military among NATO's European members.
We wear the PPE and wade through the muck so you don't have to. Never miss our thought-provoking take on the latest news and current affairs. Take TNT Radio wherever you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. I'm here with Sonia Bailey, and we are discussing all things to do with the manipulation of the people. One of the most horrible of all of the ramifications of the virus and the ceremony that followed is a lockdown. And when I alluded to in the last hour about all the things hidden under COVID, one of them was suicide, the other is isolation, unemployment, etc., etc. In my local community, there is a very new, very populated aged care facility, and they decided recently to go back into lockdown all by themselves. So families are not allowed to see loved ones, vaccinated or unvaccinated. You're out. You can't even go in there to meet up with a staff member to thank them for dropping you off something recently. They have no social life allowed. The idea that you can continually lock down an elderly person in aged care, one must ask the real question, does the person living in aged care consent? Does the person living in aged care want to live out their last days in an institution surrounded by paid employees on shift work rosters who get tired, they get cranky, they get irritable, and they get stressed as well by being in lockdown and having nowhere to go? One of the hardest things that we've all had to deal with is hearing about institutions that have abuse by their staff against the people that they are meant to look after. And of course, when nobody's allowed in, nobody will ever know. Now, it's not to say that it goes on everywhere, but it's just one more thing for a very frightened child to worry about their parent. It bugs me terribly that a loved one is given no choice. And it was Jim Brewer, the comedian, that made the point the other day, rather obviously quite humorously, when he made funny signs and gestures, etc., of having to wave to grandma behind a glass when all grandma really wanted was a hug and some skin-to-skin contact, however that might cause a monkeypox outbreak in aged care. And that's the point, Sonia, isn't it? That no matter where we go, there's always a gaslighter telling you it's for your safety. But I do ask, if you're 85 to 88 years of age, say an average age in a nursing home today, you've already lived past your life expectancy, shouldn't you get to live out your last days as you wish?
Absolutely, you should. I think that to lock down in the first place, to me, is unwarranted, regardless, even if there were cases. We've seen no evidence that lockdowns actually reduce transmission, reduce the number or severity of cases. We don't see that. And as you rightly point out, the people who are in aged care are well-aged. Is it tragic for people to die? Absolutely, regardless of the cause. But they should most definitely have the choice of who is around them while they're in their later years, while they're potentially in their final weeks and months of life. They should be able to not only access the medical care that they need, but what about the psychological and emotional care that they need? It's not enough to say, well, you know, we're torturing you, but it's for your own good.
You know, there's so many stages in all of this process, but if you are locking down in 2022 and you're a medical institution doing it, what are you saying? First of all, you're mocking the vaccine because you're admitting that it doesn't work because you've never let anyone in who's unvaccinated here in Australia. You're mocking mask wearing and N95 mask wearing at that. You're mocking hand washing, right? And you're even mocking the idea that you don't have the virus in the first place, which means you're mocking the testing, both PCR and RAT. So how can a said medical institution reject all of the medical advice and practices that the government is imposing on all of us collectively, and then having a separate one that says, nope, you just sit in your room and you sit this one out until we say it, and for it not to be against government policy, and for it not to be considered a form of torture, and for it not to be front page news, defies any and all logic in this circumstance. It's a blood boiling scenario. And if you are a person who's got a parent in a nursing home or a hospital and you can't see them, I would be betting you would be wanting to scream blue murder at all of this stuff. It's just beyond beggar's belief.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if, in all honesty, if you have a family member in aged care, and you have even remotely the possibility of bringing them home, bring them home. Because I can tell you right now, if I was 80, 90 in an aged care facility, I would rather be at home risking COVID, cold, flu, whatever, and have my family around me than to essentially be in an old people's prison where I'm not allowed visitors, I'm not allowed family, I'm not allowed outside contact. What a horrific way to finish out your life. And I think that this also goes back to, you know, 18 months ago, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, Jason, there was a case in Victoria of an aged care facility that had 55 residents. The government decided that this private facility was not following the right protocols and was not providing for the citizens, the people within the home, the way that they should be. So the government actually stood down all of the staff and sent in their own health department staff. And with a matter of weeks, all 55 residents had died from malnutrition and from not being, you know, their sores not being cared for and not being turned properly. So just their general well-being. Where was that on the mainstream media? You know, the government has essentially walked in, pushed aside all of the qualified carers. Now, if they were doing a substandard job, then the government should have gone in and said, do a proper job. But to put them all aside and replace them with people who did an even worse job, that's disgraceful. Why are we locking down now? It's completely pointless.
You have no answer for it. It's simply a matter of being able to report it and to have people at least get concerned and to talk about and to check in their local areas if it's going on over there, because it may well be that next week, unfortunately, someone has to send a loved one to an aged care facility simply because they don't have the resources to look after them at home. But I'll tell you this, COVID would have to be the worst ever advertising marketing campaign for aged care services and facilities, because one thing's for sure, I will never be going there. My family will never be going there. And we've already made the pledge to my mother-in-law that she will never have to go there, no matter what happens. So I don't know if we're the only ones doing it, but it certainly has been a line in the sand for all of us. Now, I'd like to quickly just change topics on that because we're going to run out of time, Sonia. The monkeypox story coming out of the WHO with Tedros coming out today, 9 out of 15 of his committee have decided they didn't want to do it, and Tedros has come out and do it. What I wanted to weave into this discussion here is this idea now that they seem to all want to go rogue. It's like it's safety on top of safety. It's like overcaution now. Could this be the link in all of this that's going to be the undoing? Because it's that middle ground here that some are doing, some aren't doing, and I think this is where the narrative splits it on its own.
Well, I can't help but wonder if, you know, transitioning from this aged care discussion into sort of monkeypox and what's going on with the WHO, I can't help but wonder if perhaps they know something we don't. Is there a new pandemic around the corner, and they're putting the pieces in place for that to eventuate? Or is this simply a case of, man shouts at cloud, and if we just throw out as many opinions as possible, then people won't know what to do and they'll just do as they're told? There's no clear-cut science at the moment, because what they told us was science over the last 2.5 years has very quickly been proven false. They can't run with that narrative any longer. And yet they're still putting in place all of these supposed precautions to prevent transmission of diseases that we are actually not seeing any cases of. So what do they know that we don't?
It seems to be that there's a lot behind the scenes that we're not going to see, and it's always dished out almost like a great big smorgasbord, a buffet. Here we go. We'll bring this out now. Everyone go help yourselves. Mm. And many do, and some don't. It reminds me of the idea I used to explain to people, that we're living in a world today whereby you could be shown that you're living in a great big prison, that all of us have been contained or corralled. Let's say we're like a big cattle farm ourselves, a big animal farm. And someone like Trump comes along, opens up the door to the prison, says, you're all free, you can go. And there'd be 60% of the population that would go, hang on a second, I haven't eaten my bread yet that I was given by the government, so I'm going to stay. And he'd say, look, I've only got a couple of minutes, I can hold the door open, you better leave. And they'd be, oh, no, we'll stay. And so it's like this conditioning, and this is what we talk about with the whole idea of Stockholm syndrome, don't we, where you love thy captor. And this is where we are at the moment, the great big gaslighting brainwash that's going on, and I can't help for it to be a continued theme of what we keep discussing. But we move to the next stage in the monkeypox fiasco, and the foot and mouth disease. Now, there was a very, very good article that came out today in the Maitland Mercury, some investigative work there. And some of the – because, again, in the Hunter Valley, we've been affected by the bee crisis where all the beehives have had to be rounded up. Now we've got foot and mouth threatening our cattle production, and certainly affecting the cow that we've bought, that remains something that's very important to us. Now, in the article, the journalist refers to, if you eat meat, drink milk, enjoy cheese or any other kind of dairy snack, your world will change. The virus disease affects all cattle, and it doesn't discriminate between beef and dairy. So the steak on your plate and the milk you pour on your cereal is at risk. Worse, it doesn't just affect cattle. Any cloven-hoofed animal is susceptible, so that means sheep, goats, and pigs, buffalo, camels, and deer are also at risk. Gosh, that's a lot of poultry that's going to have to be produced should we lose all of our meat. And, of course, and seafood is under threat in its own way because of the poisoning of the oceans. This thing doesn't end. And this is now hitting mainstream, and the foot and mouth disease story is a massive one for Australia.
I do think, though, it's, again, it is just this convoluted, great big fireworks show of fear. Mm. You know, if you actually just look, if you go onto the internet and you type in foot and mouth disease and your country, you are inevitably going to find hundreds of articles with headlines like foot and mouth disease spreads worry. Australian farmers, they're terrified. Parcels being checked for foot and mouth disease. Australian news, politicians return to Canberra ahead of Parliament's return because the farmers are terrified. Foot and mouth disease risk prompts cattle breeders to consider freezing sperm. Disease bomb, an $80 billion threat, and Labor's asleep at the wheel. But being who I am, I went over to agriculture.gov.au and you have a good read about foot and mouth disease, and it's highly contagious and it's terrible, and it's got all these links about male risks and vet risks and the action the government's taking and what travellers need to look out for. And then right at the bottom is this video with this dude talking about, I don't know what, because I didn't play it, but the caption on the video says, "The virus has not been detected in Australia for more than 100 years."
Mm.
So my brain said, if they could prevent foot and mouth disease from entering Australia and affecting Australian livestock in 1922, what are we worried about? By all means, take precautions, but where's this $80 billion bomb about to go off in our meat industry?
Yep.
If we're looking well at said. The reality rather than the inflated belief of fear, unless they plan on introducing foot and mouth disease into Australia, we haven't had it here in 100 years. We haven't had it here since before electricity came to our country. We haven't had it here since people switched from horse and cart to vehicles. We haven't had it here in over 100 years. So why would we have it now?
Very, very good point. And the alarmism is just overwhelming and absolutely taxing, exhausting. We're going to take our last break for the hour. And when we return, we're going to go a little bit local. We're going to talk about more than a storm in a teacup that's occurred with this former deputy premier of New South Wales, John Barilaro, once again attracting more media attention than he would like. And we're also going to discuss the political possibilities of the United Australia Party and the Liberal Democratic Party in the upcoming Victorian elections, where nominations are starting to be collected. Don't go anywhere. You're on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Better stock up on bananas. Why? Well, there's an election right around the corner, and the Follow the Science crowd want you to know the monkeypox is here. But is it really monkeypox, or is it recurrent latent herpes simplex 1 infection, herpes simplex 2 infection, shingles, autoimmune blistering disorder, or anything else caused by, you guessed it, the gene jab, which lowers your immune system function with each successive injection? We've seen study after study out of Israel, Sweden, other countries, up to a 90% reduction in the effectiveness overall of your immune system if you're double vaxxed and double boosted. Doesn't matter. They know the only way they can win this election is to steal it, and the only way they can steal it is to lock you down again. So buckle up, folks. Here it comes. Lockdown 2. Stolen election 2? Time will tell. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
My therapist had told me that I needed to go to AA meetings, but I wasn't sure whether I wanted to go because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. That was not what I wanted to grow up and be. I didn't want to go to AA, but I did, and it wasn't what I expected by any means. It was friendly. I could feel it. I mean, I could feel the happiness. It's really great.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
Don't want the government to know what you're buying? Use cash. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. It's been a terrific 2 hours ripping the Band-Aid off the government's narratives and being able to explore exactly how it is that they manipulate all of us and how those that want to not be manipulated need not be. I often mock the story about the idea that being sarcastic can cause heart attack. Well, the Daily Mail never fails to impress and has released a brand new headline saying how being sarcastic could kill you. Scientists reveal heart attack survivors with hostile traits are more likely to die from a repeat event. How is it that they can do a study on that, report on it, know exactly where they're going on, but not bother about doing any studies on vaccine efficacy or safety, but just claim it?
I am curious to know, though, did these lovely people become cynical and sarcastic before they had heart problems or after? You know, it just boggles the mind. And also, if that is the case, I'm in a lot of trouble because I'm extra sarcastic. How can you correlate those two pieces of information? It's like saying everybody who drinks water is going to die one day.
Yes.
So what about people who don't drink water and they only drink diet sodas? They're going to die one day too, aren't they?
Yeah, apparently no one gets out alive. So yeah. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Well, we've got another disease that's come up, a deadly eye-bleeding virus, which kills up to a third of its patients, has hit Spain now. Look, it's become such a joke now that you're right. You really just have to be discerning. But your research work there that you've presented in this hour has been phenomenal yet again. And I encourage everyone who's just tuning in to go back and listen to Sonia's shows about all the research that she does. Now, another story that I wanted to touch on was the John Barilaro, the former Deputy Premier of New South Wales. This has been a real big storm in a teacup, whereby he resigned along with Gladys Berejiklian, the former Premier, unprecedented moves here about a year ago, was replaced. And he got a job paying $500,000 a year salary to become the trade envoy out of New York for the state of New South Wales. And it turns out that one of his staffers has told that, in fact, Barilaro himself said that the job was created for him and it's the job that he was going to get when he got out of this place. So he had total contempt for the parliament, total contempt for his job as deputy premier, and wanted a cushy job. Furthermore, in the conversation, it was said that the job was set up in London. He says, no, I want to go to the US. And they said, well, the job over there will be gone by the time you get out of office, and it's set up in LA. He said, well, bad luck, we'll be setting up an office in New York. That's where I want to go. Now, it's that level, that stench of entitlement, the idea that everyone's above everyone else, and the corruption starts to ring true when it is the Perrottet government, who was in on the conversation, Dom Perrottet himself as the treasurer, who's now decided not to release any of this information, which of course spells COVERUP, cover up. And that is all we ever see in politics, and it's why we have no trust in the system, and yet we're meant to be trustworthy, to see these people as trustworthy. Not the case at all. What are your thoughts?
Look, I think it's a big dog and pony show, to be honest. I think, you know, Barilaro had contempt for his position. Well, guess what, mate? The feeling was mutual. He didn't do anything great for our country while he was a paid politician. He's done nothing great since. And I think what really struck me about what's happened with him recently is, as you mentioned, there's sort of this concealment of what's gone on behind the scenes. And we saw the same thing with Gladys Berejiklian as she was approaching the end of her premiership in New South Wales. She had essentially been pulled up by Australia's equivalent of internal affairs for politicians, and she was questioned, and next minute she's resigning and it all goes quiet. And we're seeing the exact same thing happen with Barilaro, where, you know, these statements that he's made and the people he's gotten in bed with, all of a sudden it's all you know, oh, we can't go into that. There's privacy and, you know, that's a secret cabinet discussion and it's not open to the public and all this kind of thing. And it's just, it's laughable. And there's a quote here from Peter Cochrane on 2GB's coverage of this story. And he says, John Barilaro is a private citizen who has committed no offence. He's being denied his freedom and is being harassed by the media. This will push him to the edge like it did with Gladys. The media needs to back off. Now, I can't help but read that and kind of grin like a fool because it's funny how the pot decides once it's gotten in the kitchen that it's a little too hot. Mate, you put yourself in this position. You've put yourself into this confliction. You know, you can't stand out publicly and say, well, I'm not a politician anymore, so you can't stick a camera in my face and ask me questions. Yeah, we can. If you're paid as a, you know, we know with prime ministers, they're paid for the rest of their life after they resign. Gladys Berejiklian resigned as premier and went into, a six-figure job. These people should be held accountable after they've left their position for anything and everything that could have been considered a conflict of interest, that could have been considered a backdoor deal that, you know, just wasn't done ethically. Absolutely, they should be answering for it well after they've left their position.
Absolutely. And it's not even an issue. And yet these guys set it up so beautifully that they can find yet another excuse or a reason or somehow to play victim. So here we are, the victims of their actions. And yet when push comes to shove and they get called upon it, they get to play victim. It's absolutely unforgivable in every aspect of how that even works. Now, in the last couple of minutes here, I just wanted to touch on the idea that as we were both members of different freedom political parties, upcoming election in November of this year in Victoria, the United Australia Party has publicly put out to its members that they can now nominate to run for the upper house only in Victoria. Is there any news that's coming out of the Liberal Democrats about their plans, whether or not they're going to run in the Victorian state election?
Well, they are definitely going to run. So we currently, in the Liberal Democrats, we actually have two elected members of parliament at the moment, David Limbrick and Tim Quilty, who most people would be familiar with. They've been around at least in the elected portion for 4 or 5 years each. They will obviously be running again. And we do have other candidates that ran in a federal election that will be running for state. That's still being finalised, and Liberal Democratic Party will expect to make an announcement next week about who will be running in Victoria and in what capacity. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, after the federal election experience, who puts their hand up to have a go and run at the state level.
Well, see, Victoria pretty much is the dominant of the Freedom parties in representation. Two Liberal Democrat Senator or Upper House members in Victoria. Of course, Ralph Babbitt was elected from the United Australia Party, the only person out of the entire party to get elected. He got elected to the Federal Senate. And suddenly he's getting a little bit of traction there. His social media work is up and running, and he's getting a little bit of a following at last, and speaking his mind, which is terrific. And of course, it's only in the very, very early stages, so it's very, very promising that the parties are having another shot at the state election, and it should then project out to what happens in New South Wales come March. So it's going to be a long battle for another 9 months of campaigning, no doubt, because we're going to have to see, just getting to August now. So it's going to be three and a half months to the Victorian election, and then another 3 or 4 months after that into the New South Wales election. So one would expect that if the UAP decides to run in New South Wales, they might run upper house candidates as well. What's really interesting, of course, is that you'll only need to get about 150,000 to 180,000 votes to be elected to one of those upper house seats, and you campaign across the entire state. So you're not trying to convince all the people of your local electorate. So the advertising campaigning is going to be different. The campaigning, obviously, different, but you do have to have a lot more brand awareness and not so much sort of local celebrity status, so to speak. So it becomes a choice. It's very, very interesting, isn't it? What do you expect? What can we hope for from these freedom parties?
Look, I think our first and foremost, we've got to get Dan Plandrews out. He has to go. Considering that Melbourne particularly was the harshest and longest lockdown in Australia, but I think they rated up there in like the top three worldwide. He's got to go. And if we can see a shift at that upper level, then that is absolutely going to have a knock-on effect to every other state in our nation and potentially in other countries around the world. Plandrews in bed with Gunner goes to China. That's a whole other conversation. But what we've seen there is this manipulation at a very high level, and that's where we've got to aim for. So I think that given, as you mentioned, we've got already elected politicians that are going to be running again in this state election, and we have experienced candidates that are also going to be running, we just got to get in there and give it our absolute best shot.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic that at least we're going to back up again and see who's going to put their hand up and run. It's a very complicated and expensive, arduous process. It's a commitment unlike anything else that you'd have to do. For many of us who had a shot at the federal election, it meant time off work. It meant changing your life around enormously and a huge adjustment going in and also coming out at the other end. So it takes a very, very special commitment from many people. We've reached the end of the hour. Sonia, it's been terrific to speak to you yet again. So much going on out there. Thank you.
Thanks again, Jason.
Coming up after the break, Rick Munn, Locked and Loaded. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to TNT Radio.